So let's start off by talking schools. The governor hit another pause button this week. This time it was on the announcement about plans for public schools this fall.
I'm surprised the governor hasn't run and hit his head under a table. I don't know how they just keep going. This has just been really, this has been brutal. But no, in all seriousness, I'm not completely surprised. I mean, there's so much information coming out. There's studies that are coming out that seem to indicate that kids are not as good at transmitting COVID. But then, you know, it seems to fly in the face of the experience of any parent. I mean, I was tweeting the press conference and I just did an aside tweet, was like, hello, kids are like walking petri dishes. So I think they're looking to get as much evidence as they can. There's a little bit of time, because what they've been doing is they've been telling school districts to make all kinds of plans, like the full opening plan, the hybrid, you're half open, half online, and then the, you know, just doing remote learning plan. And of course, this week, the American Academy of Pediatrics waded into the conversation, saying basically that they felt like the kids do best when they're in school. It's for socialization. It's for identification of kids who are, you know, having problems at home, for nutrition for a lot of kids. So there's so many people tugging in so many directions. What we're seeming to hear is that the governor alluded to the idea that they need to get buy-in from teachers. So that seems to tell me that there are teachers who are very worried about the idea of going back in a classroom with 20 or 30 kids.
All right, we're keeping an eye, waiting for that announcement. Meantime, you have an article on NC Health News that touches on another issue we've been hearing a lot about that stirred lots of discussion, and that's face masks, how they've become such a political issue.
It is. It's kind of crazy. Now, what's happening is that we're starting to see more acceptance on both sides of the aisle now of masks. And I think, you know, what happened was Texas and Arizona. Now you've had the governors of Texas and the governor of Arizona getting up on television, putting on masks, encouraging their citizens to wear them. Apparently, the data, you know, you need like 80% compliance in order to slow the spread. And I will say I've been sort of out and about a little bit this week, and I am seeing more people wearing masks than I have before. And, I think that that's a good thing. Secretary Cohen talked about it in her Thursday press conference, said that, you know, it could be 2 or 3 weeks before we see a result from this, right? Like, because there is a long lag time. So to see any decrease in the numbers might take a couple weeks. So it's been about a week since we've had the mask mandate. And like I said, you know, you're getting now these Republican diehard governors getting up and saying to people in their states, it's time to wear a mask. What's really interesting, I think it was a study by the National Bureau of Economic Research that looked at the potential economic benefit to the GDP, to the, you know, gross domestic product of wearing masks. And I think, you know, you start to get this kind of data out there and it gets attention from folks who might need this kind of persuasion.
So your reporter, Hannah Critchfield, had a really interesting article this week comparing coronavirus pandemic to the HIV pandemic.
The quote that she has is that it's kind of terrifying how little has changed. You know, you have a pandemic where, you know, it's people are saying it's the others' fault. It's the blaming. You have these horrible deaths. There's no treatment. There's no cure. There's no vaccine. Public health messages becoming weaponized in a political environment. And one of the resources we have here in the state is a fellow named Gene Matthews, who was the lead legal counsel at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention back in the 80s. As he says, he was in the room when they got the first report of the gay disease. And, you know, and Gene is an interesting guy. One of the things that he always says is that it does not do political leaders any good to try to obfuscate the reality of what's happening when it comes to a pandemic, because it will always come back to bite you in the bum. And I think we're seeing that now.
So Hannah's piece made me think of the National Institute of Health's Dr. Anthony Fauci, pretty much a household name at this point, and he spearheaded HIV research and treatment efforts in this country, and it's been really interesting to hear his perspective on those similarities.
Anthony Fauci was interviewed by the editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association, and he was interviewed the week after the AIDS activist Larry Kramer had died. And he talked about how Larry Kramer was like, Anthony Fauci, you're a killer, and how they eventually became very close friends because they chose to listen to one another. And so Anthony Fauci had a really lovely remembrance of Larry Kramer during that interview. It was a really compelling interview. It's kind of amazing, you know. And you and I, we're both old enough to remember HIV, and you remember. I'm sure you remember. It was like you had these young guys who were like, "It's not going to affect me," and they were going out and they weren't practicing safe sex. And then, of course, there were all of these public health messages around condoms and safe sex, and you know, way before there was any treatment. So, you know, it's like, so, I mean, you know, can I say this on public radio that masks are the new condoms? So, you know, so and it's interesting. I've also been reading about other epidemics. I'm reading a book about epidemics, and I've got another book that I'm reading about the last large smallpox epidemic that simmered in the American South for several decades around the turn of the last century. And one of the things that came up during the rhetoric in those days was, it was said by whites, it was said, well, smallpox is a black problem. And then it was until it got into the white community. Like these things, and Mandy Cohen says this all the time, viruses don't respect your race, they don't respect your ethnicity, they don't respect borders, they don't respect wealth, none of it. You know, if you're exposed to somebody, you're going to get it no matter who you are. And this is, that was the same thing with HIV. But the messages, like, it just hasn't sunk in for people, or maybe we've forgotten, or I don't know, or maybe there's just a whole new generation that's, you know, never experienced HIV. So it was really interesting. She really found that reporting this story fascinating. And I found this story sobering as I was reading it and thinking about friends that I lost in the 80s and 90s. I lost one of my best friends from college to HIV very early. And I remember going, I was living in DC years later when the AIDS quilt, and they displayed it on the National Mall. And, you know, I just remember it covering the entire National Mall. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. And, you know, Are we ignoring our way to another, you know, I'm at a loss for words. You know, I treated patients who I could offer no hope to. So I understand. I have a comprehension for these healthcare workers who, you know, get out there in their masks and get in front of protesters saying reopen, and that, you know, healthcare workers are out there saying no, because it is agonizing to have a patient and know that you have nothing to offer them. And you have to treat them, and you have to hold their hand, and you have to be with them as they die. It is a brutal experience. And I'm sure that any healthcare worker who's been working with COVID patients, who's hearing this now, will resonate. Well, next week, we're going to start the week off with a terrific story about an African-American woman in Charlotte who has kidney disease, and, you know, she's waiting on a transplant, and she's basically trying